tá falando. This is the Top Form Podcast with your host, me, J.R. Watkiss. I interview people from all over the world who are at the top of their game in music, film, politics, sports, and business. In their own words, you will hear how they are changing the way we think, the way we play, and the way we do business whilst operating from their top form. So tune in every week to listen to who will be my special guest to tell us about their journey as a top performer right here on the Top Form Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. Hey, thanks for tuning again to the Top Form Podcast. My name is J.R. Watkiss, as you know, and I have another top performing guests for you today. No other than Baby Sham, Damien Beckett, original dancehall, 90s DJ. The man I DJ from I was in high school. They really played an influential role in how I shaped my early years, because they really, he along with his peers at the time, made some really powerful songs that last to the day. And I had a conversation with him. We just was chatting and we recorded, and it's going to be a podcast episode. So you have the privilege of listening to our conversation right here on the Top Form Podcast. So without much further ado, we'll go right into my conversation with Baby Sham.
Baby, about what you're doing, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we decided to go with Sham from then. But it's always Baby Sham, especially for females. Babies. If
it's my babies. Oh, that's where it comes from. We get it. Does that present a branding problem for you, though?
Oh, no.
Are you on Baby Sham?
No, we own both rights to both names. Man. Because I've had the name from probably 89, 90. And
you registered the name from 89, 90?
No, I registered the name probably 94. When we met up with Dave them and Janet them.
So hold on. Because me know about you like 95, 96.
Yeah.
So let me take it back. Like, yeah. How you started in music? Like, tell us about that inclination, that inspiration that caused you to enter music.
Well, my uncle had a sound system.
Who that?
By the name of Studamix.
Uncle. Yeah.
Studamix from Water. So that sound system used to compete with the likes of King Jammies, Black Scorpio. So Super Cat used to perform on the sound system. John Wayne used to perform on the sound system, Little John, just to name a few. And that's how I got the love for the music. But at the time, I was just a little tiny tat, you understand? Just a little toddler.
Sprugger.
Yeah, just a little toddler. And I fell in love with the music from then. So I used to have my uncle's studio where I could really go there and kind of try to own my skill. And it was a different job. I just see like people like Super Cat come and just in the backyard and take the microphone and toast it. These are people that people would spend any amount of money to go and see live, but you were seeing it in your backyard. You get what I mean? So that's how I got the love for the music. When my dad passed away, you know, I was in probably first farm at Calabar. That was probably 1990. And this DJ by the name of Bojo Bantan was on fire.
I remember that personally.
Yeah, on fire. So like, Bojo was the one who made me want to become an artist per se. You get what I mean? So by buying Mojo Records, because we used to play sound system also as kids. We used to have a sound system that we used to get all the teenage parties, the Sweet 16s, this, the that. And I would use the sound system now when we play at the parties to kind of hold the microphone and try to get my name out there. You get what I mean?
Because that was the thing then.
Yeah.
After mash up a sound.
Yeah.
Nobody even looked for you.
Like back then, if you can't perform live on the sound system, it's like,
you're not DJ.
No, you're like a studio artist, like somebody who they created, like Mini Vanelli or one of them. You understand? No disrespect, but that's how Jamaicans look at it. Like, you have to really can come in front of the mass and all your own without getting microphone shy or crowd shy. You understand? And that's how we started out, sound system style, going around playing at these parties, these Sweet 16s, Sweet 15s, whatever it is. And then I would hold the mic for like 5-10 minutes. And at the time, I had a song by the name of One Bag of Antlers. It wasn't on record, but it was known throughout Kingston 20 because a lot of sound men had it, and it was big. Like, every kid was singing it, playing ring games, and met up with a few producers, but all of them were like skeptic because my trouble with sinus, yeah? Like, no, we kind of have it on a level, because we kind of know how to take care of it and everything. But back then, it was really, really bad. So I had this nasal sound, and they were like, no.
Funny don't. Enough, with enough artists that just use that sound there.
Yeah. But you have to remember, so back then, it was a deep baritone that was running dancehall, the shabas, the bojos.
Okay, catch a breath. My conversation with Damien Beckett, aka Baby Sham, continues. I asked him about his relationship with Bounty Killer and how that started, and he had this to say.
I went to the reception, and that's how a wedding reception. And that's how me and him really, really start click like cool. Cause it was just me and him alone. No one else was with us that day. So we drove from Jammin' Studio to, I think, Lee's. They call it Lee's at the time, this department store in Jamaica that sold clothes. And that was the first time I've ever seen
that. They might get a big plug right now.
Yeah. That was the first time I ever see that, where an artist or a human being just walk into a store, pick up a fresh suit. I don't wish to name the what sort of brand name. Sneakers, shirt, pants, changed in the changing room, paid for it cash, and walk out. And I'm like,
whoa,
they need piece of this. Where we come from, this don't happen.
All the drugs do that. Yeah, love them
this
kind of
happen, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I like that, you know what I mean? And
then you made music. You made some powerful songs together.
Yeah, all the songs came about. Dave never really have a contact with Killer. It was me who had the contact. So we had this beat by the name of Haunted, and we had written a song by the name of Worthless Boy. And Dave was like, you know, ooh, this would fit this production world in dance and music. And he came over the same day, boom, one take, and knock it out. And ever since then, him and Dave always have a contact, and the chemistry between him and Dave when they're in the studio, it was natural. It's few artists and producer have that chemistry. When Killer and Dave in the studio, everything, especially on Three of Us, because Dave don't really talk much. So when we write, it would be me, would be the one who would be in the studio kind of delivering the melody and telling him, okay, boy, come a road and a room and a rat. And then he would catch on, because Rodney is very quick and very, like, one of the most, me that's probably the most talented in terms of delivery dancer I've ever seen.
Yeah.
In terms of delivery.
Even now.
Yeah, in terms of delivery. Probably now.
Viewers, I didn't say this.
Probably now, in need. The producer. To get the best out of him. You understand? Mm. Like you would hear Snoop record, and it don't sound like when he record for Dr. Mm. Dre.
That's true. I mean? Killer definitely legendary in terms of sound.
Yeah.
And him have some sounds where still clap.
In terms of delivery. Artists can't take that from him. No matter how popular you are, you can't deliver like this dude in the studio.
Not even Gaza man them. Gaza man them can't them have it.
Come on, man. Delivery? Probably writing, but not delivery.
Killer have it.
DJ technique? Come on, bro.
Yo, when you make some songs, right? You guys made some songs and persons used to blame. I remember this.
Yeah.
This is like 99. When your album dropped, before the album, persons were saying, me and them no grounds, man, Babylon boy, anytime.
Yeah.
Those songs were causing havoc in Jamaica. You remember this?
Yeah, man.
The news was talking about it, you know. Because you guys had the culture and lock.
Yeah.
Just like Gaza time now.
Yeah.
At that time, it was born to be in a baby sham.
Yeah.
You know? Do you take responsibility for that? In that time, in terms of the impact your music had, and even the crime that happened at the time,
I wouldn't say the crime, because when you look at it, when the movie Killer came out, and we saw this dude at a black 19 and just made one squeeze and 50 came out, that influenced a lot of things. A lot of road boys in Jamaica wanted that. Did they blame it on the movie Killer? Did they blame it on Rambo? Our commander. All of these things have influences. They find out that artists like a mirror of society. Whatever society reflects, we tend to reflect it back with music, lyrics, and words. You understand? So if society is not reflecting that, what we are making in the studio, you wouldn't be hearing that. There wouldn't be the reason why it connected those gangster songs or rude boy songs connect is because that's going on. You understand what I'm saying? So if you really think about it, it's a musician, if you take away the art from a musician, he's no longer an artist. So you have to allow a musician to express his prowess, which is what's going on in society. We normally watch the news, or probably our friends are in certain things, or whatever we are seeing. If you listen, if you get a story, am I making up these stories, or these stories are real stories that's going on throughout the world? And not just in Jamaica, because we travel all over the world. And if you go to Brazil, Africa, you have people that come up to you and tell you that that's their exact story. You know what I mean? So you find that, I would have said music influence crime. Politics influence crime. Musicians don't support guns and all these things. Politicians do that. We'd never tell someone, say, you know what? Go and shoot up a poll office for my song to be big. No. So that was just politicians and the government kind of
skew it over.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And because art is kind of, because music, they say that music is the only thing that lives on. You find that music have a wider influence than anything else. So it's naturally going to get the blame more than even the TV.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I mean?
What are the ingredients that go into you making a song? Even now, back then and even now.
Yeah, everything. Everything. It's like you're traveling and the least of the thing, you'll be here and you are just talking regular conversations and I'm here getting something different from what you are talking that you wouldn't get from it. So music influenced by everything around you, everything you think. Sometimes it's the funniest thing or the simplest thing. Sometimes it's a female that's so hot but she's just cool. And I'm like, what? Oh, she's just cool, so she's hot. You know what I mean? And that would come out in a hook, or if you listen, Tables Turning Way and Foxy. Tell them how my really turn.
Still Foxy. Clap. All right. Still a slap.
Alright.
Any dance.
How that came about was we did at 97 Summer Jam 2000. And Man and Man was the biggest song throughout North America at the time as a dancehall song. And we came off stage at the, I think it was Giant Stadium, and this white dude, this kid came up to me. It was like, yo, that man, shit. I love that shit. I don't know what you're saying, but I love that. Every day I play it in my car. And I'm like, if you don't understand what Man and Man is saying, and you are going so crazy for Man and Man, if you understood what it was saying, you get what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's how, when Foxy link up now, the idea was to kind of try and make songs that people could get it. So if you notice, like I started kind of studying a few tapes, few CDs at the time, listen to all rappers kind of pronounce certain things, but our, what do you call that now?
Diction.
Yeah, like our, it's natural because our, what's the word?
Lingua, rhythm.
Our lingua, I wasn't looking for lingua, I was really looking for...
Nuance.
No. Just the way your Jamaicans pronounce things. Just our dialect then.
Yeah.
You get what I mean?
Cadence.
It's natural. So even if I said, tell them a woman, I didn't say, tell them, and I said, tell them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it come out natural, and it's not going to sound like I'm trying to rap. Tell them a woman, we are the femme. Mm-hmm. Love to see the shorties in a Benz or a BM. A life you're living right. Just words that we wouldn't normally use in, just choice of words that we wouldn't normally use within dancehall space then.
Yeah,
I was trying
to, those were deliberate efforts,
yeah,
to cross,
yeah, and it wasn't even to cross. I just kind of wanted, I wasn't thinking about crossing over, I kind of wanted the fan base to kind of understand me then, because right then and there I realized that it's not just Jamaican or the Caribbean crowd was listening to me, because Man and Man was huge and he was doing shows where a lot of kids were coming out that weren't from the Caribbean. So breaker, call the Undertaker, we'll be dying. You can hear it. Like if I don't tell it to you, probably you're not seeing it. That he deliberately made these songs so the world could understand. And even that come from just that kid coming up and saying, I didn't understand what Man and Man was saying, but I love it. So music on a whole, is influenced by so much different pieces and so much different parts that you put in. And that's why it's so good. You come into this little room and put all of that together and you see the billboard shaking and you're like, what? You know what I mean?
Yeah. You make good songs, really good songs, but you don't make them often.
No.
And you don't make albums often, but you make good albums too. Yeah. I personally buy, like literally buy the albums that
Thank you.
Wow. When I go into the country, I was just telling somebody that country is wow. Like,
That's
wow, you know?
Yeah,
you
get vibe. That. Yeah. Yes, drive out.
But you don't make albums often. I and the people like me who came up would want more albums. Yeah. Is that a deliberate effort to keep your mystique and to not put out music? I've noticed that you put out one song a year. That's slap. Versus the other guys, other DJs that
100.
Make 100 songs a week. You know.
Yeah.
What's your format?
To each his own, you know. So I would not knock anyone who wants to make 100 songs per year. But if you really think about it, if we have a 1 hour 15 minute concert, can you perform 100 songs? You get what I mean? So for me, it's always quality over quantity. From day one, it's always quality over quantity, and that way you make classic music. If you notice, if you watch, Janet can send you some of the clippings from the concert in Jamaica the other day. Any one of the concerts show the world. You have songs like Jah Ride that came out 1996 when I was a boy, like literally. You know what I mean?
And that's still relevant.
You're still performing those songs. And the younger generation.
96, I didn't know that's when I came.
Singing the songs. So you wonder how come these songs transition from generation to generation. But I think it's the quality over quantity and kind of picking your spot. And it's kind of harder for us. Because when you make 100, you have room for mistake. Like in our situation where you're just making one for the year, you have to make the right one. So you have to be a sharpshooter, you have to be right, bullseye, bang, bang, you know what I mean? And it's a challenge, but
at the end of the day, you miss. Because you cover one. They always hit doing it, but that must be a nervous feeling, like
let me tell you,
suppose get the story, yeah. Right? I go to press it. Someone the DJ them not like this.
To me, it's never about what they like. It's about what we like, and you kind of believe in your product and just push your product to the as hard as you can push it. It's believing in your product. You know what I mean? You have some of the songs out there that are great songs that never get the time of day. Probably. Who's ever made it or who's ever produced it or the record label just didn't have the faith in it. Know what I mean? Atlantic Records told us that Get a Story wasn't the song. They told us that. Seriously? Yeah, a lot of people don't know this. So Get a Story wouldn't even be what Get a Story is today if it was for Atlantic Records alone. To them, the song was Boom Boom featuring Rihanna. To me, that song was fire. And is fire on performing up to today. It was number one chart on a lot of the Caribbean islands and throughout Africa and Europe, but to me, Get a Story was something different. Get a Story was my life. So to them, it's just an ex project, like any record label. So they couldn't understand it until after the same at 97, the next time around, at 97 Giant Stadium, again, the song took the whole park apart. You're talking about 65,000 people, and they had all major acts on the bill at the time. All the major rap, R&B, and that song was a song at the evening. The song took the park apart, the stadium apart so much that Funkmaster Flex cut the live show. I've never heard that. He has never done that again that I've heard of. The live show, cut the live show, and played it live on the air. So you heard 65,000 people saying rap. Just picture that. And that's when Atlantic Record kind of bought
the attention.
It. Yeah. But we were always pushing it. And on the road and grinding nonstop and touring, and they were like, it's the street record, we don't think it's pop. I'm like, yo, you're not, you're in an office.
We are the ones that are out there performing for 10,000 people, 5,000 people. You need to see it to understand what's going on. And that's when they saw it. And the first thing they said that they, oh, we need to put Lil Kim on it. I'm like, Lil Kim? Crazy? Lil Kim? Lil Kim don't have nothing to say. First thing, I would more go for Foxy. Because Foxy is like my sister. No disrespect to Kim, but I've never heard Kim talk about social commentary. But by the time they
She did a lighters up, which was
but that's a Jamaican from the Jamaican knockoff type of vibe. She was kind of flipping a song that was out. You know what I mean? But for us, we had already had Alicia Keys. So the deal was, if Atlanta was messing around, we were gonna cancel the deal and go with the Alicia Keys without anybody at all. So when they said Lil Kim, we were like, you know that we have Alicia Keys. And they were like, no one gets Alicia Keys. Like, we have So we had two remixes at the time. We had Akon, because Akon was on Vitamin S Rhythm. A lot of people don't know this. He was on Vitamin S Rhythm from 2003. No one knew him. Locked Up wasn't out or anything. He was on Vitamin S Rhythm with a fire song. At the time, he was sounding like Barrington Levy. Sick, 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 sick. And we had Alicia Keys also. So give it up to Alicia.
Yeah,
for the one that really reached out, you know, and a real girl,
and turn the song into a whole.
Yeah, something different. Is that an next level?
How much did that song sell?
Probably worldwide, probably 1.7.
Whoa,
worldwide.
That's a question I want to ask you. Persons are not realizing. I did you before we did this interview. I did your numbers. I know Janet sent you a feature that I did on my TV show, World Music.
Oh, yeah. I saw it in the plane.
Yeah, I did the YouTube numbers.
Okay.
You have even bigger numbers in terms of record sales. Mm-hmm. What persons don't realize that you as a dancehall, do you identify as a dancehall artist?
Yeah, man.
You as a dancehall artist, consistently going platinum. Mm-hmm. That's more than possibly 99% of
none of them. The only person probably have the numbers that we pull is probably Sean.
Yeah.
It's probably Sean. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Hardcore dancehall.
No, hardcore?
Hardcore. Because you bring hardcore to the. I remember. That's
the
hardcore.
The closest thing is Jamrock.
Yeah. And that's reggae. Yeah. Really.
All right. So, hardcore dancehall, nobody else.
So, you've been bringing dancehall to the mainstream with platinum records. Do you feel like them underrate you? Like them, they give you props?
I think it's more my personality. So my personality, if I'm here, you'd never see me in the light. I would be in the corner, around the side, you know what I mean? And I think that personality also of the producer, because probably both of us are not good for each other in terms of, that's me and Dave Kelly, in terms of personality-wise, in terms of musical chemistry, we're perfect. But Dave is the type of individual that he never goes on camera. He never does interviews.
Yeah, because no, I don't know what he looks like.
Ah.
But there's a whole legend about Dave Kelly at Jamaica.
You know what I mean? So normally, if you have an artist that's more reserved, then the producer would be the one that really goes out there. But both of us are reserved. But at the end of the day, the numbers will speak. And they will have to recognize. And if you check my touring history, that means we're doing something right. It's something you're doing right. Why? You've been here since 1995. And still touring and still relevant. So it is what it is. We know that probably if it was someone else, it would be in the papers everywhere. And you know what I mean? But it's all good. At the end of the day, numbers are going to show, man. And numbers are going to count. And at the end of the day, the fans don't know what time is it.
How come you and Dave Kelly remained friends after all these years? Because that's unusual in dancehall.
It's unusual in any music. Yeah, you find that money gets between a lot of people. You know what I mean? I think me and Dave are more like brothers, like an older brother to me. And we have never ever let money or nothing at all got between us, you know what I mean? We always just remain who we were from day one. And Dave been making big songs way before me. You're talking about action, not about those big songs. Remember Dave responsible for Terry Fabulous' career? Nadine Sutherland.
Bujo
Banton. Tony Rebel. Garnet Sick.
Barry
Salmon.
Beanie Man.
Beanie
Spraga
Man.
Benz.
Spraga.
There's a song that Spraga said he
Louis
wrote for
Beanie. No, All Dark. All Dark. Like we, the song was written for Spraga. Spraga.
Like, well, Spraga
recorded the song. No. So Spraga recorded the song, but today if the delivery just wasn't right, the vocal wasn't right. And at the end of the day, it's not about hype, egos or individual, it's about the music and the work that needs to be done. So as a creative juices flow, it's never about you or me. If that fits this artist more, as an artist you're supposed to know that, you know what, it fits him more.
You know, and that I mean? Says something about Spraga too. That's a level of humility.
Carlos are real youth, you know. It naturally must hurt at the time because that kind of hurt somewhere different, that competitive level where you say, damn, I'm going to eat it, I'm going to eat it, you know what I mean? But when you really look back now at history and see what old dog did, come on. That was the right chance.
And as writer, I'm get mechanical royalties.
No, he wasn't the one who wrote that song. It was me and Dave.
Oh, was he and Dave?
Yeah.
Oh.
So the song was written, then Spraga came in and was like, you know what? It wasn't the right vocal. But remember that we and Spraga are friends.
Yeah.
Brothers. So to me, even I was rooting for Spraga more, but Dave as a producer had a better ear than both of us.
And being a man's personality was...
Yeah, it was right. It's like Moses delivered wicked. You can't go around that. It's like... If you were supposed to say, okay, we wrote Anytime and Can I Get Her? I could have done Anytime. Killer would have done Can I Get Her? Which one would pull off, which one more?
Yeah.
Can you see Killer saying, get the dance? Bust the dance? No. So it
get on the dance! Yeah. Bust the dance! Yo!
It was the right choice, you know what I mean? So when you write these songs, it's like you would say, okay, this one fits me more. It's like, dude, we... wrote Dude, Foxy did a demo for Dude. I want a dude with the wickedest slam. Beanie Man came to record and it's like Dave was saying, we should give him Vitamin S. Me personally was in love with Vitamin S more than Dude. And I'm like, nah man, if they're saying that he needs something right now and they're gonna, it's at the time the record label plus I think it was some liquor sponsor was putting together this crazy promotion and they were guaranteed that whatever we gave them was going to be fly, was going to run because they weren't going to put the money and everything behind it. And I was telling Dave that, nah man, give Beanie Dude. We're going to give him Dude and I'll do Vitamin S. Dave wasn't with it. It's the first time ever I've ever seen Dave like Adam and like, nah, this one is really you. This can be bigger. I'm like, brother, listen. If him need it now, me not have a record label yet. You understand? We don't have a deal yet. We have deals on the table.
So make him run with that.
Make him go.
And make new song.
Yeah, make him go. Dude, flew.
Yeah.
But then Vitamin S piggybacked it. And that's when right
I see him vibe. I see him rhythm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So Dude peaked at probably number 7 on the Billboard 100. Vitamin S peaked at number 15. So... give up, you understand what I mean? Yeah. So you give up one, but at the time it was a better thing to do, business wise.
And those things are not happening anymore. Like dancehall, not even reggae music, is reaching the Billboard charts outside of Sean Paul and Shaggy.
Yeah,
in the top 100. What do you think the state of reggae music is now, and what does it need? You know, what's the missing energy that's preventing it from going mainstream?
It need record labels that's not trying to rape it. I think it need good management. It need quality production too. You find that the production level is not where it was back then. I think the last song we had that hit the Billboard was Wine. Wine kind of got away, kind of just breakthrough. We were just watching some reality show and these housewives were just dancing to Wine and gyrating. I'm like, what? This is how Wine is out, you know what I mean? Because we were just touring. We're not paying attention. And then by the time we look around, Wine was probably at number 30-something. Without any major funding behind it all. So. But I think it needs a lot of things. It needs good management with the artists, them. Good management team. I think dancehall and a whole and reggae lots. Good management team, you know what I mean? I think it needs more stable production. I find that sometimes the production fluctuates. And it's not as consistent as the 90s or the early 2000s, but the talents are there just the same. And you have so much talented musicians too. Musicians and producers. But they have to realize, and artists have to realize, that it's not about IP. Either. So if the producer say, hey, you need to go back and record this, or this song is not good enough. My feelings don't get hurt from that. you have artists now that would walk out of the studio and never go back. So sometimes some of these newer producers are scared to tell the younger artists now that this is not good enough. You know what I mean? Because they think that they know everything. You know what I mean? Which, when you're in the studio, it's never about you as the artist. That's why you need a producer. So if the producer tell you it's not good enough, you go back on the drawing board and do what you have to do.
What do you think about the reggae Grammys? Like, the category itself. Do you think there needs to be a dancehall separate from a reggae? And tell me, two questions I'm asking. One, the nominees this year, Black Uhuru, Protégé, Etana, Ziggy Marley again. One more. Ooh. Four or five? So Protégé and Etana, Black Uhuru.
Ziggy.
Yeah.
Somebody else is there though.
If somebody is there. So what do you think about the category and its contribution to reggae dancehall over the years and now?
Me bias, you know. Because to me, them robbed me my Grammy.
Which
year? Because...
Whoa?
Yeah. No, whoa. Get a story. Should I win the Grammy by far? Nobody else was doing the numbers. Nobody else was as popular. And at the time, they gave it to Lee Scratch Perry. Yeah.
But Grammy is about voting.
Yeah.
Lobbying.
So the thing about it is, the Grammy is not about numbers. It's about who has the best PR.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I didn't know that. You get what I mean? So if you really think about it, even Morgan Heritage won. I was glad for Morgan Heritage, but Jackie Ory sold so much more than them. So it's not about
the numbers
or the popularity of the song. It's about the PR team that they hire. You have some PR teams that are known to deliver Grammys.
And really lobbying, because let's say, get a story, right? If you can register down to the artwork man as a him have a product in the Grammy, right?
Yeah.
And have him have a vote for you.
Yeah.
A lot of these
organized... Yeah, man, a whole heap of things. It's who you know.
Yeah.
And you have to have a link on the inside.
Yeah. What do you think about this year's nominees? Who you want to win and do you think it's a fair...
All right. Would even say who more want to win? Because somebody probably
wants to win. No, man, you have to tell me who you want to win.
Feel offended.
No, would even say who more
personally want to win?
Me interview Gang and him say he want him brother win.
No, that's
saying,
natural.
Him say
no,
nah,
go against him family. Him can't go against him family. That's natural. For me, all of them we here get nominated. We respect them as peers and we see them on concerts and greet each other and we see each other and we talk and we have good relationships. So any one of them win, congratulations to them. That are me personally.
Do you still want a Grammy?
It's only right.
So we're going to get the album this year?
It's only right. It's only right. Yeah, my album coming this year. Well, make sure it's right. And if it gets to that point, well, hopefully we can learn it. Hopefully we can learn it. But Grammy don't want you. I hope you want.
Maybe they're trying to give you they give Bob Marley like a long service award. they're trying to do that. Streaming is now a thing. We mentioned our Ghetto Story sell 1.7 million records.
Yeah.
But now streaming is the thing. Like 1.7 million people are hardly going to go to a store or even download. Have you fully understood what streaming is and integrate it into your business format?
Yeah, we're still learning because it's fairly new. And we're still learning, but we're there. We're catching up, you know what I mean? Janet, them, Maddox, and all kind of more used to the old school way of doing things. Yeah, you notice they have so much plaques all over here. They're used to the older way of doing things, but they're learning, and we have new people that we have hired that kind of on top of it. But we're getting there, you know what I mean? We can't tell you that we have everything locked or we're supposed to have it locked because even the record labels are still catching up.
Mm-hmm.
They still haven't gotten it locked because people still out there that streaming now without paying. So we're still learning. So we're getting there.
Yeah. My last question is the live show circuit for reggae, dancehall is really where the artists make money from. I want a Lawless shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going into, setting up some kind of structure where
I can go and buy Baby Sham t-shirt before me got Baby Sham concert.
Yeah, but it's already there.
It's already there.
It's already there. So you are behind.
So the whole structure is there.
Yeah, you are behind.
I love that.
So it's already there. The website is www.shamwell.com. So you find the Lawless, the brand Lawless on a whole is even bigger than what we thought it was. You know what I mean? You find that it's already just on its own, doing its own thing. I don't even promote it no more like that. Mm-hmm. Before I used to. When I knew that it was taking on a life as its own, Junior Gang went to Coachella to perform. I think Nas had a set at the time, and he called me from his tour bus and like, dude, I'm going to send you this video. This dude was walking, going into Coachella, white, like a white college kid.
Lawless.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, yeah, I love that. You know what I mean?
So you were a visionary, because no person I catch on, even Travis Scott went number one off merch.
Yeah.
Not really album sales. He must tie the album to the, to the t-shirt and them other stuff.
Yeah, man.
You were ahead of the game. Yeah, I say that this is the way music going. Right.
Even we did California. The California tour finished last week. And merch basically, if you can think about, if you really think about it, merch outdid concert fee.
Wow.
Because remember, concert fee, you have so much that's coming out of it. You have to pay a band, you have to pay engineers, you have to pay a booking agent, the tour bus.
But merch is years.
Merch did way better, bro, than anything else. And merchandise.
Tell this to the artist, because I try to tell.
Now, it's a great look to when you hit the stage and you see all the females in them Lawless bra tops and Rude Boy them wear them hat and them t-shirt, you know what I mean? So it make the vibe more even intimate, you know what I mean? Where you're on stage and you're seeing all of that, and it's a good look, it's a good man.
Where's O?
She did it, man, but you have to understand O
was she never... gave us two slapping songs.
You have to understand O was never an artist. She was never ever an artist. Wine. We were searching for, we wanted to do a demo to send to a real artist. And I asked her to do the demo at home in the studio. She didn't even come to this studio because she's shy like that. And she recorded the demo, and it was my idea, and Dave, because he was like, yo, this sound good, probably we can release it as it is. So if you check out Wine Record, it just said Sham. Because we didn't know what to do then. You know what I mean? Then when people started asking now, like me personally sat to that and like, people are asking, and it's something that you can capitalize on because you have the machinery around you. And that's how she came up with the name Miss O. And we did turn up after.
Yeah. Dancehall classics.
Yeah, she's lucky.
Yeah. Something with you, you know, like there's something about you where when you drop a song, it just hit. Yeah. That hard for doing, you know? Yeah, that easy.
You have so much artists that work for years, brother. Years, and never get
even one song.
Not even one. And she got two.
Yeah.
Two big classics that no matter where you go in the world, man, no matter what audience.
For the careful as a man, you are singing.
Yeah.
Find yourself on the dance floor and sing, man, is that a. Yeah, right. Whoa.
Whoa.
Baby Sham.
Yes, sir.
This was really interesting. This is a Top Form podcast.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.